नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयो मुदीरयेत् नाष्टप्रयेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवाच्यत्मश्लोके Bhaktir-bhavati naishtaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed, and thus, loving service to the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. Today we're going to finish chapter 7 of canto 5, last two verses. The Sanskrit is in prose, and we've just basically been stumbling with it, so it's not on the board. But we'll just read the English. I don't know if that's exactly what Prabhupada would want, but that's the situation right now, so we have to deal with it. This is the chapter about Maharaj Bharata. He's gone off into the forest now, and he's doing all kinds of tapasyas to realize the personality of Godhead. Maharaj Bharata appeared very beautiful. He had a wealth of curly hair on his head, which was wet from bathing three times daily. He dressed in a deerskin. He worshipped Lord Narayan, whose body was composed of golden effulgence, and who resided within the sun. Maharaj Bharata worshipped Lord Narayan by chanting the hymns given in the Rig Veda, and he recited the following verse as the sun rose. So we will hear what he sang. It's a beautiful verse. Please repeat. Maharaj Bharata appeared very beautiful. He had a wealth of curly hair on his head, which was wet from bathing three times daily. He was dressed in a deer skin. He worshipped Lord Narayan, whose body was composed of golden effulgence, and who resided within the sun. Maharaj Bharata worshipped Lord Narayan. By chanting the hymns given in the Rig Veda. And he recited the following verse as the sun rose. So we'll hear that verse a little bit later, but first we'll hear the purport of this verse from Srila Prabhupada. The predominating deity within the sun is Hiranmaya. Lord Narayan. He is worshipped by the Gayatri Mantra. And you're going to hear it, folks, even though you're not supposed to until you're initiated. But, of course, everyone knows this one. They sing it all over the internet, right? It's beautiful the way they sing it, too. But I don't know how bona fide it is. Om Purvavasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi. Doesn't quite finish it, but that's okay. He is also worshipped by other hymns mentioned in the Rig Veda. That actually means, let us meditate upon the worshipable effulgence of the divine sun, not the sun of Krishna, of Vasudeva, but the sun in the sky. Let us meditate on the worshipable effulgence of the divine sun, who is inducing our meditation. He is also worshipped by other hymns mentioned in the Rig Veda. For instance, Jaya Sada Savitri Mandala Madhya Vardati, Within the sun, Lord Narayan is situated, and he has a golden ewe. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master is forcing open my eyes with the torch light of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. Vanchikalpa Tarupyascha Kripasindu Pyevacha Patitanam Pavane Pyo Vaishnave Pyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'd like to reflect a little bit on the beauty of the Krishna conscious person. Of course, Maharaj Bhat was very beautiful physically, but he was also very beautifully spiritually because he was advancing Krishna consciousness. And this reminded me of when Kardama Muni was meditating on Lord Vishnu, and he was finally, Lord Vishnu actually came and appeared before him, and Lord Vishnu said, "What do you want?" And so first of all, Kardama Muni was praising Lord Vishnu. And he said, "You know, only the people who are like animals will approach you for mundane benedictions." And he said, "I'm one such animal. I want a wife. And she has to be so beautiful, and she has to fulfill all my desires." And he said, the Lord said, "No problem. It's already done." So later on, that prospective bride was brought to see Kardama Muni by the father of the bride, who was, I think, Swayambhuva Manu, if I remember correctly. And there was an exchange between the emperor and the sage. And he said, "Will you accept my daughter?" He goes, "Who wouldn't accept her? She's so beautiful that when the demigods see her, they fall off their airplanes." Well, she wasn't only beautiful, she was also very qualified. So he said, "Yeah, sure." Actually, in the beginning, the king was saying, "You have to accept her, because if you don't accept her, you'll end up being a miser. If you don't accept a blessing that comes of its own accord, you'll end up becoming a miser in the future." In America, they have this expression, "Don't look a gift horse in the mouth." Have you ever heard that expression? It means if a gift's coming, just graciously accept it. Anyway, so, of course, Devahuti had already heard about the glories of Kardama Muni long before, so she was already attached to him. This is the power of hearing. She had heard from him about his glories, about him, and she had become attached to him in her mind, and when she saw him, she wasn't disappointed. So I'll read a little bit about that. Sri Maitreya said, "O great warrior Vidura, the sage Kardama said this much only and then became silent, thinking of his worshipable Lord Vishnu, who has a lotus on his navel. As he silently smiled, his face captured the mind of Devahuti, who began to meditate on the great sage." And Prabhupada says in the purport, "It appears that Kardama Muni was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, because as soon as he became silent, he at once began to think of Lord Vishnu. That is the way of Krishna consciousness. Pure devotees are so absorbed in thought of Krishna that they have no other engagement. Although they may seem to think or act otherwise, they are always thinking of Krishna. The smile of such a Krishna-conscious person is so attractive that simply by smiling, he wins so many admirers, disciples, and followers." Now, Srila Prabhupada, this lady, her name was, my dear, she was married to Mr. Agarwal, Sally. Prabhupada wrote her a beautiful letter, "My dear daughter, Sally." Anyway, she said, when Prabhupada laughed, it was oceanic, and he laughed a lot. So she was very much attracted to Prabhupada smiling, Prabhupada's laughing, because his laughter was his bliss in Krishna consciousness. So I thought that was nice to meditate on. The beauty of Maharaj Bhat was not the beauty of the noble savage. We've heard about the noble savage, right? This is part of the romantics in Europe. They wanted to go back to meditating on the beauty of nature and the beauty of the man who is associated with nature, so they glorified the noble savage. Well, the savage was more noble than modern man in many ways, but he was, after all, a savage, so he may have had some beautiful features. But and Maharaj Bhat, if you hear about him living with, you know, living, wearing deer skin, etc., you might think, oh, he's just another noble savage and he's attractive. No, it's not like that. It's something completely different. It's transcendental. He was a pure devotee. And he was meditating on the Lord's form. Specifically, he was meditating on the Lord's form as Surya Narayan. And Prabhupada talked about this verse from the Rig Veda, and I will read that verse to you. There's another verse that Maharaj Bhat was praying. I found this verse. Of course, you know, you read this verse and you think, I have to find this verse so I can share it with the devotees. And it's in the folio, and it's part of the deity worship, actually, to meditate on the Lord's form when you're worshipping Shalagram Shila. Says in the Archana Padati, not the Archana Padati, I think it's the book by Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu. Chant the Dhyana mantra for the deity you are worshipping and meditate on his form. For Dhyana of Lord Krishna and the worship of the Shalagram Shila, chant the following mantra. So this is the mantra. Om Jaya Sada Savitri Mandala Madhya Varati Narayana Sarasi Jasana Sanivishta Keura van Kanaka Kundala van Kiriti Harir Hiran Maya Vapur Drita Shankar Chakra. Lord Narayan is seated on a lotus asan within the sun globe. This is what he was meditating on. He wears a crown, golden earrings, and armlets on his gold-complexioned body. And in his hands he holds his conch and disc weapons. All these features make him ever captivating. One should always meditate upon the Lord in this way. And this is exactly what Maharaj Bhat was doing, as Prabhupada described to us. And so this is the prayer that Maharaj Bhat was, and he chanted many prayers, that was one of them, but he chanted many prayers, and this is another one that he chanted. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is, this is the next verse, is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe and bestows all benedictions upon his devotees. The Lord has created this universe from his own spiritual potency. According to his desire, the Lord entered this universe as the Supersoul, and by virtue of his different potencies, he is maintaining all living entities desiring material enjoyment. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the giver of intelligence. Would you like to repeat it, because it's such nectar? Would you like to do that? Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe and bestows all benedictions upon his devotees. The Lord has created the universe from his own spiritual potency. According to his desire, the Lord entered this universe as the Supersoul. And by virtue of his different potencies, he is maintaining all living entities desiring material enjoyment. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the giver of intelligence. Jai. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The predominating deity of the sun is another expansion of Narayan, who is illuminating the entire universe. The Lord enters the hearts of all living entities as the Supersoul, and he gives them intelligence and fulfills their material desires. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Who knows this verse? Sarvashashaham vidisani visto. You know that one? Matakshmachir gyanam apolanam cha. What's the next line? Huh? Vedavit Avacham, yes. He says, he's in the heart of every living being, and he gives knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, he is to be known. Indeed, he is the speaker of the Vedas. As the Super Soul, the Lord enters the hearts of all living entities, as stated in the Brahma Samhita, Andantarasta Paramanu Chayantarastam. He enters the universe and the atom as well. In the Rig Veda, the predominating deity of the sun is worshipped by this mantra. We just said it. This is the nectar, third time we say it. Jaya Sada Savitri Mandala Madhya Varti Narayana Sarasi Jasana Sanivishta. Narayan sits on his lotus flower within the sun. By reciting this mantra, every living being should take shelter of Narayan just as the sun rises. According to modern scientists, the material world rests on the sun's effulgence. Due to the sunshine, all planets are rotating and vegetables are growing. We also have information that the moonshine helps vegetables and herbs grow. Actually, Narayan within the sun is maintaining the entire universe. Therefore, Narayan should be worshipped by the Gayatri Mantra or the Rig Mantra. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 5th canto, 7th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam called The Activities of King Bharata. We will hear more about the activities of King Bharata in the next chapter. And we can just take a moment to reflect on the Lord in everyone's heart. There's a very wonderful description by Srila Jiva Goswami, I believe it's in the Satsandarbhas, that proves that God is existing within the heart. He goes in detail. You studied it in college, right? In very wonderful detail. I won't go into it. I've described it here before, but I won't go into it today. But the point is that the Lord in the heart is not the ultimate form of God, because if he was, then that would mean that God is everybody's order supplier. He agrees to be everybody's order supplier, but that's not his ultimate feature. His ultimate feature is Krishna. But we are very blessed to have this knowledge that this intelligence that we're receiving is the form direction of the Lord. And without this intelligence, we can't do anything. And we can elaborate a little bit more about that by also meditating more on this realization of the Lord as the sun. I'm not sure about you all, but I'm sure we all had the experience to some extent. When we were growing up, we look around, we try to understand what's going on around us, and it was pretty difficult to understand. People would try to explain to you about the elements or about how the world's working. I just remember thinking none of it made any sense if you really tried to understand the world. Does anybody have recollections of that as you were growing up, trying to figure out what's it all about? And then, you hear things that they would show us in school, these pictures of the insides of the body. I thought, no, that's not it. That can't be it. It's just too horrible. I just blocked it. I just had a mental block. I still have a mental block when I see these pictures, because they represent that as, you know, the secret reality that you don't know. It's underneath the skin. I thought, that can't be it. That's too horrible. I mean, they make it look nice in the book, but so we can look a little bit at the sun, and then we can look a little bit at trying to understand the nature of life and the nature of the absolute truth. Oh, there's a nice meditation on the sun in the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 17, about ecstatic love. By the process of executing regulated devotional service, one is actually elevated onto the transcendental stage. So this is the thing. When you practice devotional service, you actually begin to understand a little bit about what's going on. At that time, one's heart becomes onto the transcendental stage beyond the material modes of nature. At that time, one's heart becomes illuminated like the sun. The sun is far above the planetary systems, and there is no possibility of its being covered by any kind of cloud. Similarly, when a devotee is purified like the sun, from his pure heart there is a diffusion of ecstatic love which is more glorious than the sunshine. Only at that time is the attachment to Krishna perfect. So we all feel so good, especially here in Belgium, when we see the sun. I was sitting here yesterday chanting japa. I had a few rounds left, and I was chanting here. And every now and then, the deities would start looking really effulgent. I would think, oh, it's something mystical. But it was the sun coming somehow or other past Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa sun. And And then, you know, you get this warm, wonderful feeling when the sun comes. We all can relate to that, right? How good the sun. Of course, if you live in a place where the sun is always shining, they more or less take it for granted. But you live in Belgium, when you see the sun, it's like meeting an old friend. Where have you been? Can you stay around for a while longer? It feels so wonderful. And there's another very nice mantra that we chant in deity worship. It's probably familiar to you all. I love this. I chant this before I say my Gayatri mantra. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashanti Sudayo Riviva Chakshuratitam Tad Vipraso Vipnavro Jagrivamsa Samindhate Vishnu Yat Paramam Padam. Anyone familiar with this translation of this? You can. You know it? Yeah, you go ahead, say something. Just as the sun's rays in the sky are extended to the mundane vision, so in the same way, the wise and learned devotees always see the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu. And because those highly praiseworthy and spiritually awake Brahmins are able to see that supreme abode, they're also able to reveal that supreme abode of Lord Vishnu. Such an attractive. The devotees are the givers of light, the givers of the light of Krishna consciousness. It's a wonderful meditation. This is also from the Rig Veda. And Prabhupada also translates it another way. The lotus feet of Lord Vishnu are the supreme objective of all the demigods. These lotus feet of the Lord are as lightning as the sun in the sky. So you can see the Lord didn't leave us alone in this creation. He gave us many wonderful reflections in his energy that we can try to approach him with some understanding. If we're guided by these Vedic mantras, we can begin to understand something about the beauty and glory and lovableness of the Lord. Because, as I was mentioning in the beginning of the class, it's very difficult to understand what's going on in the material world. I was trying to find it on the Veda base today, but I couldn't find it. That I heard Prabhupada say this in a morning walk. Shivara Gopinath Ki Jai. That the world, everything in the world is actually inconceivable. So he just confirmed what we all knew when we were growing up. If you don't understand what's going on, it's all really, and no matter how many times people try to explain it to you in terms of facts and figures, ultimately how the whole thing is going on is really inconceivable. Of course, we get some glimpse of it if we, as Prabhupada was saying, if we practice Krishna consciousness seriously and we take the trouble to absorb ourselves in the knowledge of the Shastra. When I was thinking about that, how, like, we're like dumb, deaf, and blind in this material world because our spiritual senses are completely covered over. And I was reflecting on that. I was meditating on how Helen Keller began to come out of her blindness. Have you ever heard of Helen Keller? She's famous. She passed away now. She lived in the 19th century. But she was a very intelligent child. She was born, but when she was just 19 months old, she became deaf and blind, which also, of course, made her dumb. She became so frustrated. She became like an animal. She was always breaking things because she was trapped in this little body. And she was very intelligent, and she couldn't explore. She couldn't. So we're a little bit like that. We're like souls trapped in bodies, and we're blocked unless we get the mercy of a pure devotee. And I thought I'd share a little bit with her experience when she first began to break out of the darkness by the mercy of her teacher. Someone was drawing water and my teacher placed my hand under the spout. They'd had those pumps in those days. As the cool stream gushed over one hand, my teacher spelled into the other the word water, plain language. First slowly, then rapidly. I stood still, my whole attention fixed upon the motion of her fingers. Suddenly, I felt a misty consciousness of something forgotten, a thrill of returning thought, and somehow the mystery of language was revealed to me. I knew then that the water meant the wonderful, cool something that was flowing over my hand. That living word awakened my soul, gave it light, hope, joy, set it free. There were barriers still, it is true, but barriers that could in time be overcome. So we can all relate to that, right? When we got Prabhupada's books, I remember the first article I read by Srila Prabhupada, life is not void, God is not zero. And it was just, it was like so wonderful. Prabhupada was saying materialism will never satisfy us. Buddhism, that everything is void, if that was the case, we could all just die immediately, everything would be fine, but we don't want to die, unless we're really in bad shape, then we don't mind dying. And then the idea that God isn't impersonal, I had encountered all these ideas, right? That God isn't impersonal light. You know, what's that going to do for you? I mean, now we know that the effulgence of God is something wonderful. I mean, it must be something wonderful. I mean, if you get the sunlight is wonderful, what about the effulgence of, you know, the direct bodily effulgence of the Lord? But that won't satisfy us. What we need to do is take our senses and engage them directly in the service of the personality of Godhead. And then the senses which are always seeking engagement and the heart that is always seeking love will be properly situated and become relieved and purified from this darkness called lust and ignorance. That will be removed and we'll be able to see things clearly and we'll be so happy. And I thought, yes. Yes, this is it. Well, I wasn't thinking anything, actually. There was two voices going on inside. One was saying, you know what? You've been looking for this for so long. You've been, this, take it. Don't run away now. You must accept this. And another voice is going, come on. There's no such thing as God. Don't get tricked by these words. So you can imagine, the one voice is very friendly and kind, saying, please don't let... Please take this. And the other one's going, oh, come on. So what one would you choose? Right? I thought, this other voice is very friendly. It's telling me. This was the super soul, of course. I didn't know what was going on. I was having an epiphany. But it was something, when I hear this, you know, that living word awakened my soul, gave it light, hope, joy, set it free. There were barriers still. I knew I had to. I still had some work to do, like a lot. It is true, but barriers that could in time be overcome. This is what happens when we receive the knowledge of the scripture, of the spiritual master, of the saints. We have great hope. Now, Prabhupada, this is another little place where Prabhupada talks about Krishna's inconceivable energy. Because, yeah, there is this idea that it's mythology, right? What we hear about in the scriptures, mythology. But Prabhupada says, everything is possible by Krishna's inconceivable energy. Everything is possible. That is inconceivable. It is called, therefore, inconceivable. We cannot conceive how it is done. Our intelligence is very little. Prabhupada even gives the example. We don't know how our hair is growing. We shave it grows back, right? Our nails are growing, we cut them, we don't know. There's all kinds of scientific descriptions of what's going on, but what is the actual potency? This is inconceivable. We cannot conceive how it is done. Our intelligence is very little. We cannot conceive. Therefore we say, oh, this is all, Prabhupada would say, mythology. Because we cannot conceive of it. Whatever we cannot conceive of, we take it as mythology. Nothing is mythology. Everything is possible. That is inconceivable, but they cannot understand what is inconceivable. So people can't understand what is inconceivable as long as they're not willing, or as long as we're not willing to accept the guidance of those who have knowledge. And as soon as we get some indication of that knowledge, our whole life takes on a whole different direction, a whole different meaning. And Prabhupada says that this is the meaning of Krishna consciousness, that it's giving great hope. And ultimately that great hope is for going back to Godhead and not having to be in this world and be constantly bewildered by so-called happiness and so-called distress, but to be in a place where we have transcendental happiness and transcendental distress, which is all happiness. All of our bewilderment will be in relationship with Krishna. We'll be bewildered by the most wonderful emotions. We'll never know what's going on from moment to the next. We'll be so excited about our relationship with Krishna. We had little glimpses of that, right, when we were young, when we were playing, everything was wonderful. You see the little children, they're looking at the world with great wonder, discovery. You're thinking, oh, poor kids, when they grow up, they're going to find out. But anyway, let them have their fun now and let them have that sense of wonder so that can carry over into the future. And they can have what she called, remember, she said, I stood still, my whole attention fixed upon the motion of her fingers. Suddenly I felt a misty consciousness of something forgotten. So our experience of wonder as a child is forgotten. It's a little bit of a sense of depending. The child is completely dependent. The child is in a mode of discovery. And we become like that child when we take Krishna consciousness very seriously. We're always discovering something wonderful and exciting about Krishna. And then, of course, when we're in the spiritual world, there's so much more that will be revealed to us. But we can even hear about those things now. We can hear about Krishna's leelas and how to participate in them. Something wonderful happened with Krishna Kshetra Prabhu. He, for his Vyasa Puja last year, he insisted that his disciples, rather than writing glorification of him, they write their response, their internal response to Krishna's leelas. He wanted them to focus on the leelas outside of Braj. And each devotee could offer their involvement in these leelas and what, you know, how they envision these leelas and how they respond to them. It's so beautiful. If you read this book, it's so beautiful. And Krishna Kshetra Prabhu even put a couple of articles in there. One is about, he's the Brahmana who's bringing the message to Rukmini. Rukmini's message to Krishna, and all the emotions that the Brahmana was feeling. In one sense, he was in ecstasy, but on the other side, he was like hesitating because who was he to do this? And anyway, it's like a whole series of emotions that he had. They're so ecstatic, somewhat bewildered, but very ecstatic. And another one, he was writing about Shatadanva. Shatadanva's experience as he was running away from Krishna. You know who Shatadanva is? Shatadanva is, he killed Krishna's father-in-law because he wanted the Shamantaka jewel. And he was urged on by none other than Kritavarma, and I believe even Akura. That's why Akura was cursed that he had to be involved in this whole nasty business because he took Krishna away from the gopis. The inhabitants of Vrindavan cursed him. You took away our Krishna, you're going to get in trouble. And he did. Anyways, so Shatadanva is running away from Krishna, and he's exhibiting all the different symptoms of one who is close to Krishna, but in the mode of fear. But finally, at the end, when Krishna cutting his head off, he realizes this is my Krishna, and he's feeling ecstasy. Wonderful meditation. Anyway, so this is, if we're actually given what the scholars call our religious imagination, if we give it a little free rein based on the Shastra, we can already begin to feel some wonderful immersion in Krishna's pastimes. I thought this was a stroke of genius by Krishna Kshetra Prabhu to enliven our meditation on the pastimes of the Lord. Otherwise, if we don't go a little bit deeper and try to envision what it's like to be in these pastimes, we think, oh yeah, I've heard that one, and I've heard that one, and I've heard that one. But as soon as the whole concept came up, I started meditating on, it was really interesting, because just the concept was being revealed to me, and I started meditating on Rukmini. It's funny, and then after that we heard about Rukmini, and not from another angle, but Rukmini was how she felt when Krishna was telling her, you should divorce me and marry somebody else. So I started thinking how she must have felt, like, you know, but wait a minute, I've got so much service I am going to do for you. And trying to calm herself down and not, but of course, immediately she lost her consciousness because the thought of separation from Krishna was so bewildering that she, and then of course Krishna picked her up. And Krishna, he took four hands, you know that, huh? He was in his Narayan form when he picked up Rukmini. So he needed four hands because he needed two to pick her up and he needed one to smooth her hair because her hair got completely scattered. And then he needed another hand to wipe away her tears. And he was just telling her how much he loved her. Now that's what we call romance. I'll go for that. spiritual romance, you know. And it's spiritual bodies. They're completely effulgent and eternal. And so the idea, I think I'm a little bit wandering now, but I was talking a little bit about how Krishna's lila is inconceivable, even in the material energy, it's inconceivable. But when we get the knowledge that is revealed to us by the Shastra, particularly by the pure devotee, we begin to grasp the wonder of even the material energy, and we can begin to glimpse a little something of the spiritual energy. And this is the glory of how the inconceivable becomes revealed to us. And of course, Maharaj Bharata, he was totally immersed in that. Well, maybe not as much, not totally. He still had a little area where he had to be tested, and he was tested. And in one sense, you could say he didn't pass the test, but if he had passed the test, we couldn't have learned a very valuable lesson from him, or we couldn't have tried to learn. And that we'll hear about in the next chapter. So thank you for listening patiently. I tried to meditate. I tried to draw our attention a little bit to the beauty of the Krishna conscious person, how he's so attractive. We can all relate to that. Prabhupada was so attractive. I mean, he was, you know, for us, he was ancient. I remember the first time I saw a picture of Prabhupada, how could he be revealing all this? He's ancient. I mean, in those days, anybody over 30 was considered ancient, right? I was unfortunately a little bit from the hippie thing. And then there was the meditation on the Lord's form, beautiful form of the Lord in the sun. And we talked a little bit about how the Lord is in everyone's heart as the best friend, but that's not the ultimate feature of the Lord. He gives us intelligence, how we can fulfill our material desires. Of course, he's waiting for us to turn our face to him. And then we looked at a meditation on the sun and how the sun reveals to us so much about the Lord. And in fact, the sun is the incarnation of Surya Narayan. And then the process of knowledge being revealed to us by the mercy of the spiritual master. So thank you for listening patiently. If anyone would like to make a comment or a correction, or ask a question, and I can't answer it, I'll get Ananta Rupa Prabhu to answer it. Yes, hi, Kapu. I can't, you have to keep your hand, I can't see. We should not hear what? Oh yeah, it's Prabhupada wanted to keep it confidential. It's better not to chant it unless you've received it from your spiritual master. Of course, they chant this first line all over. It's all, you know, people chant it, and they chant it in really, really nice tunes. I have to admit, I kind of like it. But I had to remind myself that the people who are chanting it are not really devotees of Krishna, so I shouldn't listen to it. But my material mind gets a little fascinated. Yes, Prabhu? If you don't chant it at the sanjas, it doesn't have the same potency. It's bogus, yeah. Yeah. They have a nice kind of feeling, it feels all nice, but they don't actually, the heart doesn't actually become purified. In that, you know, you become more and more attached to Krishna and you give up your material attachment. Yeah, ideally, I like to try to, it's hard in the wintertime here, and it's hard in the summertime too, because if you want to get early in the morning, well, you have to wait till 8 o'clock, and then you're busy doing something else. So, and then noontime, in the summer it's easier. Noontime and the morning are easier. But sometimes in the summer, the sun doesn't go down till 11 o'clock. But it's a really special feeling when you can meditate the Gayatri Mantra just when the sun is rising at noon, and when it's like, especially I like the morning and the evening when the sun is going down, and it's like, you just really feel close somehow. And maybe you've heard of Gaurangi. She's kind of like a second generation devotee. I think her parents joined when she was really young. She has a fabulous voice, and she wrote a song about Gayatri Mantra called Chasing the Sun. Quite a beautiful, about, you know, she's urging everyone who's a Brahmin, it's time now, chant your mantra. And she's obviously very much immersed in the bliss of chanting the mantra. She was inspired, so she wrote this really nice song. It's a little unorthodox, but it shows her attraction to a Gayatri mantra. Anything else? Bhakti Rasa, any comments, questions? Oh. Thank you for blessing us with your association here. Okay, then we should end here. And prasadam is at 9 o'clock. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.